Charting Toward Intimacy covers mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. How should a couple handle NFP when one spouse wants to use it and the other doesn't or disagrees with the just reasons for doing so? That is the question that we are tackling in this episode of Charting Toward Intimacy. Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy, where we are expanding the conversation around Catholic sexuality. My name is Ellen Holloway, and I am a Catholic speaker and coach who specializes in sex and marital intimacy, and I am the host of this podcast. Today's episode is a treat. I'm having a conversation about what to do when your spouse disagrees on your reasons for using NFP or just doesn't want to use it. And I'm having this conversation with someone who more or less disagrees with my opinion on the answer. We have a super fun special guest here. Normally every other episode we have Kathleen with us, but we have Kathleen's flip side with us. Michael, would you like to introduce yourself?
I would. My name is Mike or Michael. Kathleen refers to me as Michael. Everyone else in my life calls me Mike, so I don't know what to make of that. But
That's so funny.
Yeah, but since you sort of know me only through her, it would make sense that you would refer to me as Michael, so it's fine, I guess.
Today, we are going to be talking about, we got a listener question, and Michael and I think, come from two pretty different perspectives on this, so I think it'll be really fun to hear both of our sides. Not that we're going to have an argument or something on the podcast, but just we really think about these things differently, and I think it's going to be awesome. So here's the question. How should a couple handle NFP when one spouse wants to use it and the other does not or disagrees with the just reasons for doing so? I love this question. So, Michael, now, what would you say if, let's say, like some good friends of yours came to you and they were like, the woman was like, I want to use natural family planning and my husband here doesn't agree that we have just cause to avoid pregnancy. What would you say to that friend?
Ephesians 5, just do whatever the husband wants to do. Just kidding. Yeah. Well, it's tough. You know, the obvious sort of follow-up question is, well, why? Why do you want to use NFP, theoretical friend? And why does your husband not want to use NFP? And are those reasons in line with the gospel? But I'd be most interested to hear why the husband doesn't want to use NFP, I guess. It seems fairly straightforward why you would want to use NFP. You have some reason to abstain from having children. But it's like, why does the husband not want to use NFP? Well, it's one of two things. It's either a very sort of low-to-the-ground sexual thing. It's just like, I don't want to deal with the nonsense of abstaining. Or it's probably something more highbrow and philosophical. And I don't think that NFP can be used licitly or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I guess there's sort of different responses to both. But with respect to that first one, I just don't want to deal with abstaining, right? Listen, right now, your female listeners are cringing and they're like, this guy's got to be kidding me. How is he even giving this response the time of day, you know? But sort of giving the male perspective, my life has been made more difficult and my psyche has been more negatively impacted. And in my opinion, our marriage by disagreements and issues with our sex life, much more so than the number of children we have. So when we have 5 kids, it's a lot of kids. That is stressful for sure. It is financially difficult, you know, whatever, all those things. But if you just want to say, hey, what makes my life more difficult, which I think is often the barometer that women use for like, hey, should we abstain or not? Or should we use NFP or not? For me, it's like having these seemingly arbitrary, annoying times when we just can't do one of the most important things that a married couple can do, which therefore has all these cascading effects in terms of our marriage, in terms of my own psyche.
You know, I think that's, I'm really loving hearing this perspective because I think what happens a lot, we're always banging the drum of self-control, which is absolutely necessary, absolutely, you know, a virtue to build, absolutely a fruit of the spirit, right? But I really like the way that you worded it when you said our marriage has been affected more by arguments from our sex life than the number of children that we have. And I just think that that's something to really reflect on if you're listening to this. And maybe you're in kind of a situation like this where either you want to use NFP and your husband doesn't, or it's maybe just something like your husband wants to have more sex than you want to have. I think it's important to kind of like just reflect on that particular thought of like, what is causing more stress and more discomfort in your marriage? Is it the number of children that you have? Or is it like this argument that this perpetual argument that exists with sex? Because I know there are a lot of couples who kind of just have that perpetual argument just sitting on the table.
Yeah. And I would say too, like, I guess, I was coming after the ladies there, but maybe in your defense a little bit, I think it is a man's duty to take care of his wife. I tell Kathleen all the time, hey, you're my queen. I think it's sort of uniquely a man's duty to take on sufferings for the sake of their marriage, for the sake of their wives. I think it is right for a husband to be strong in the marriage. So I think there's something to be said there, that the sufferings of a husband are somehow less than the sufferings of a wife. And that's the lot in the life of a husband. And that's not always fun, and that's not always fair. And I always tell Kathleen that I just need to crucify my flesh. And then she's like, oh no, that sounds like psychologically neglectful to yourself, and that's bad. It's like, okay, well then just have sex with me. Like, what are we doing here then? Like, that, you know, if you don't want me to crucify my flesh, then like, okay, great. I don't want, you think I want to, you know? There's this Bill Burr bit, which I will heavily edit, where he says, for some effed up reason, when the ship's going down, the women and children get to go on the life rafts first, right? You know, I don't know why that is, but that is the way it is. And that feels just somehow. So, I don't know. Maybe go down with the ship a little bit, boys.
Oh, my gosh. Michael, by the way, you guys, Michael has been wanting to come on the podcast for months. And it's not that I haven't wanted him to come on. It's just that...
No, it's totally not that. I'm sure, yeah. It's just been scheduled. Yeah. It's not that I don't want to have sex with my husband. It's just that all this stuff like comes up, and I don't know. And then we just end up somehow not having sex. Come on.
Whoa.
That's what you just did right there.
Wow.
I mean, not exactly, hopefully. This just got very uncomfortable.
I do want to say, though, wow, you made an interesting point there of me not having you on the podcast. It wasn't because I didn't want to have you on the podcast. It just, I never prioritized it, right? I never made it important to me. And that's something that I think we as women as a whole, and of course, we're just kind of talking in big generalities here, right?
Sure.
If you and your spouse are on the flip side of this conversation, just flip our words, right? But I think that's something that we often don't recognize is the, you know, our desire for sex very likely is lower than our husband's. And sometimes we just kind of like, we're just like, ah, whatever, like his desire needs to go away. But desire is good. Desire was created by God. Like if you like anything, theology of the body, if you go in that direction, like desire is going to lead us to God. Desire is going to get us to heaven. So we as women should never be like, oh, you know, my husband's desire, it's just too high, you know, and just like shove it into the closet. Absolutely, we need to utilize self-control, temperance, and chastity, of course. But at the same time, like, we can't just shove the desires in the closet because then they're just going to explode in a really nasty way. And actually, oh my gosh, I have a wonderful example to explain this to you all, because my household is frozen right now, as in the movie. That is all we want to watch. That is the only book that we want to read at bedtime and nap time. So Elsa has this power, right? She has this power that she uses as a kid, and it's fun and it's beautiful. And then she makes a mistake. She makes a mistake like every human makes a mistake. And instead of being told that she was forgiven and then being encouraged to continue practicing that power that she has in beautiful and good ways that are appropriate for her stage in life, instead she is told to shut it down, right? So then she attempts to shut her power down, and in doing so, shuts herself out from basically every pleasure in life. And then, as she continues to shut her power down, it comes out in an ugly way. It explodes out of her, and she hurts people. right? This is the same thing with sexual desire. If we just try to shut it out and we say, oh, conceal, don't feel, right?
Don't let them know.
Don't let them know. Don't let them know that I have sexual desire. Don't let them know. This is something that we as women, particularly like women who were raised Catholic, Christian, a lot of times we have this like, don't be a sexual being. Don't let anybody know I have desire. And then it explodes out in nasty ways. And this also, you know, this happens on both sides of the spectrum of men and women. If we're told to just shut our desire down, throw it in the closet, then that's when we start making mistakes with it, because it just becomes this like boiling pot that then boils over, and then we hurt people and we don't follow God's will for our life. But Elsa up on the North Mountain, right? She's singing Let It Go. I'm not done with this.
This is profound. Keep going.
Right? She finally lets it go in a safe place, right? There, she knows that she can't hurt anybody. She's in an appropriate place to like let her power out. You can think the same thing of like a husband and wife are in the marriage bed. That is an appropriate place to just let that desire out. And Elsa builds something beautiful. It's gorgeous. I mean, and they mention that throughout the rest of the movie multiple times of just like, wow, like that's ice. Kristoff is like, oh my gosh, that's ice, you know? And it's beautiful what she allows that power to do when she lets it out in an appropriate way. And that's exactly sexual desire. When we let our sexual desire out in an appropriate chaste context, meaning within the sacrament of marriage, within the marriage bed, or, you know, the marriage couch or the marriage kitchen floor. Like, it doesn't actually have to be the marriage bed, right?
The marriage back of the car, you know?
Yeah, love that one. Whatever, right? Yeah. Within the marital act, it is beautiful, and it makes us more holy. Letting that power out makes us more powerful. As Elsa practiced her powers more, she got more powerful and could do even cooler things. That's the same thing for our sexual desire. As we let it out in appropriate ways, we are able to feel that desire even more fully. We're able to love our spouse even more fully. We're able to be an image of divine Trinitarian love even more fully. Like, sex makes couples more holy. So there's my Frozen analogy.
Yeah. Wow, that was like a scene for scene. I mean, you really walked that whole, who knew that Frozen was actually about repressing sexual desires?
I do want to kind of just harken back to the question and just make a couple of like practical suggestions, because I think we've talked very theologically, theoretically about this. But so going back to, you know, okay, how should a couple handle NFP when one spouse wants to use it and the other does not, or disagrees with the just reasons for doing so? I think the most important thing here is communication. Something that Michael said at the beginning was, you know, why? I'd want to know why the husband doesn't agree with just reasons. I'd want to know why the wife feels this way. And that, I think, is the crux of how to handle NFP, is laying it all out. My sister calls this a come to Jesus talk. Like, you just put everything on the table and explain your wants and explain your needs and explain your desires and explain your frustrations and work together. Like, you are a couple, you are married, you have the grace of the sacrament that will help you to work through this difficulty and this disagreement. But you've got to lay out all of the cards. And if you're having trouble, you know, really coming together and then laying out all of those cards, couples counseling might be a fantastic choice to kind of give that safe space to really let all of those thoughts and desires and things out on the table. I'd recommend a Catholic counselor if you can, because this is such a Catholic topic that a lot of counselors are kind of like, may not have the best advice.
They're like, just
for you,
just go masturbate. Like, what's the problem?
Like, what's the problem here? I don't understand. So I'd recommend a Catholic counselor if you can swing it. I know that's a little bit hard. But also at the same time, I mean, a counselor, if they are worth anything, they have to respect your values. So as long as you kind of lay out your values at the get-go, if a counselor is not respecting your values, then you need a different counselor. But that's a totally different topic. But I just kind of wanted
I would say too, though, what are you really talking about when you have just reasons? You're probably talking about either physical health, mental health, or finances. Those are the three things that you should be pretty much not on the same page with in terms of being. You should be talking about that stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. Physical health, mental health, and finances. And frankly, finances is basically just mental health anyway. I mean, it's rarely the case that like another kid will like mean that you can no longer afford food in his family and you'll all die. Typically, it's no, our finances will be more strained than they are now, and that's going to be cause, you know, sort of undue amounts of emotional distress or whatever. So yeah, I mean, if those are three kind of important things for you to have the pulse of one another on anyway, you know, so probably best just to talk about those regardless.
Right. Those should be like regular conversations for you and your spouse. Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae, he lays out four. I think you just sort of coupled a couple of them. You know, he says social, economic, psychological, and physical. So those are the ones that you need to consider. And I think what he means by social is a little bit more of like society and then also the social aspect of the family unit itself. I think that's a lot of times what he's talking about there. But yeah, though, I think those are that's a good direction to kind of start in, is like really discussing those in depth. And I think, you know, there's definitely a world of argumentation about just reasons. And, you know, it's like, oh, some people are like, oh, there's no such thing as a just reason. And then others are much on the other side of the spectrum there. But I think that's something that is so individual per each couple. Some couples, yeah, in their situation, there is no such thing as a just reason. And that's wonderful. And then other couples, there absolutely are just reasons to avoid pregnancy. And that's something you have to figure out with your spouse and God. Like, no one else can tell you if your reason for avoiding pregnancy is just or not. I can't tell you. Like, literally, no one else. No one else can tell you. Like, it's you, your spouse, and God.
So, I mean, maybe. I mean, many thoughts. But it's so funny. I think you have a very feminine pattern of thinking, and I have a very masculine pattern of thinking. And I'm listening to you and being like, nah, bro, if my buddy is like, I want a motorcycle, you know, and I won't be able to afford that if I have another kid, so I'm going to abstain. I'm just going to tell him, bro, that's unjust. Like, I don't want to tell you, like, that is not just between you and God. Like, I am your brother. I'm, you know, that's fair. Coming to you as the church and as a prophet in your midst. I'm telling you that's not just. You know, I just wonder if it's possible to slide into sort of relativism. You mentioned concupiscence. Mm-hmm. And as you discern these things, if you don't have firm principles guiding your discernment in terms of whether it's just to abstain or not, because I'm a crappy human being, will always default to what's going to give me the most pleasure, what's going to be easiest, you know, whatever, because I have concupiscence, right? And I wonder, you know, if that danger exists here too. You know, so I think you have to, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm just too stressed out to have another kid. I'm Byzantine. We have in the Divine Liturgy at one point, it's the Orthodox liturgy, long story, whatever. Maybe Kathleen's mentioned it before, maybe not. At one point in the Divine Liturgy, it says that we need courage before the fearsome judgment seat of Christ. Mm. And it's like, man, like, I'm there at the fearsome judgment seat of Christ. There's some martyr, like, in front of me in line. And Jesus is like, yeah, come on in. There you go. Now I'm up next. And I'm like, ah, listen, I was just too stressed to, you know, to listen to the gospel. He's going to be like, you know, the martyr's going to, like, turn around and give me the side eye. I'd be like, you know. So I think there's a sense in which what you said is true, that there is individual discernment required. But I think it's also the case that we are going to tend toward those things which stress us out less, which give us more money, which give us more, maybe give us more sexual pleasure. Maybe it's just like, I don't care how many kids we have because I just want to get laid all the time. So the opposite can be true here too.
Right, absolutely.
But I think in that discernment, you're not honestly discerning if you don't acknowledge that your concupiscence is driving you mm-hmm. towards what do I want versus, you know, what is permissible or, you know, something along those lines. So, that's where I think those kind of some of those external principles are helpful, because then it doesn't just become, well, this is just between me and my husband and God, you know, because God's easy to not listen to. I do it all the time. Super easy not to listen to that guy. He's even easier to not listen to than me, you know, I'm sure Kathleen would say. So anyway, I don't want to get too far afield, but I think it is important to think, like, you know, that there are some kind of hard and fast rules. There are some principles that you need to apply, and you need to be serious about your discernment and not just sort of like, oh my gosh, like, I could not handle another kid right now. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, could you? Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know. There's like, in like the steppes of Russia in like the 18th century, there was like these peasants, like 15 kids under one gross little thatched roof hut, you know, and they made it to heaven. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think what you're getting at is, and this is great, because we're recording this just a little bit before Halloween. And right now we see a ton of Memento Mori stuff. And people are always like, around Halloween, Catholics get all Memento Mori. And it always kind of frustrates me, because I'm like, this is not a Halloween thing. Memento Mori is not a Halloween thing. Memento Mori is literally every decision that I make. I need to remember that I am going to die, and I am going to have to bring this to judgment in front of Jesus. So, and that's exactly what you were just talking about, of like, I'm in line behind the martyr, and the martyr is like, all right, hey, Jesus. What's up? I care about you, right?
I know you.
Yeah. I know you, right? And then we walk up, and it's like, Jesus is like, so tell me what's going on. It's like, yeah, man, I had too much anxiety. I just couldn't handle praying every day. That just wasn't something I could do.
It wasn't in the cards.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, man.
Ooh. I think, but we have such a permissive attitude towards one another. Like, you want to have empathy. So your friend comes to you, you know, and they're like, I'm losing my mind right now. Like, my kids are insane. I can't do it. Hey, listen, come on, man. Like, just relax. You're a parent. Everyone gets to the end of their line. Like, we treat one another in a way that's trying to convey empathy, and that's trying to, like, lessen the suffering of others. And there's a sense in which that's good. But I wonder if it goes too far sometimes. And it's like, you know, we should also be exhorting one another, reminding each other, you know, like, the truly loving thing is to be like, yeah, helping your friend when he gets to the fearsome judgment seat of Christ, to have that guy be like, no, I'm good. I'm going to come on in. I don't know. So again, I could talk forever on anything. But
I think really what it's all boiling down to, and we'll end here, is it's all so nuanced. There's, you know, there's these sides of the spectrum, and we want these clear cut lines. And that's just not how it works. Because we are all individual. We are, like, Jesus has an individual relationship with each and every person on this earth. Like, Jesus has a relationship with you that he doesn't have with any other person. And our salvation is individual as well. Now, yes, absolutely, we're called to, like, help those around us in their journey toward Christ and all of that kind of stuff, right? But when we focus too much on, like, ultimatums and lines, then we kind of miss something. And when we don't focus enough on those hard and fast rules of our faith that our church has kind of wrestled out and figured out over the course of, you know, 2,000 years, if we don't focus on those enough, we also have a problem, right? So there's this both and of recognizing, you know, all of these different factors that come into whether or not an action is morally licit and morally not. And truly the only person who can judge that is Jesus Christ. Like, we can't even fully judge whether or not our own action was morally licit or not, but we can do the best that we can, right? And we can continue to grow, and we can continue to learn, and we can continue to form ourselves, and we can continue to practice, because that's what we're doing. We are practicing chastity. We are practicing temperance. We are continuing to get better and better and better at it.
Sure. Again, it's funny. This is exactly why you brought me on, right? I think you summed that up in a way that's very feminine, and I would probably do it differently in a way that's more masculine. And that was. Listen, your viewers are, I'm sure, largely women, and that's good. You know? So praise God for that.
Well, thanks so much, Michael, for coming on.
You're welcome. Never happened it again.
Thanks so much for listening. If you are not already following us on Instagram, be sure to check us out at Charting Toward Intimacy. And if you listen to podcasts on a platform that gives you the option to rate or review, we'd love for you to do that because it helps us spread the word about the podcast. If you ever have questions, comments, or episode topic ideas, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can reach out on Instagram or send us an email. Our email is in the show notes. Until next time.